Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment.
Sounds a little different this week. I wonder why that is. JGB episode 58. Cop in Alamoine. Let it keep recording.
No. Redo that. Redo no. It.
It's perfectly okay.
Well, edit Lemoyne. Sounds a little bit different out.
Lemoyne College is a private Jesuit college in DeWitt, New York. It was founded by the Society of Jesus in 1946 and named after a Jesuit missionary, Simon Lemoyne. As its founding person, Lemoyne was the first co-educational Jesuit college in the United States. Whew, I did the first bit because I thought there were some words in there that might have been a little difficult. All right, tell us about Lemoyne then.
Lemoyne is a 168...
Do you want to do the first part as well?
Oh, wait.
Luckily, we're not a professional podcast, so we're all right.
As of 2020, the college enrolled more than 3,700 students. Kind of sounds like the same amount as Colgan.
It's comparable with some of the high schools, for sure. Right. But they would have 4 years as well, right?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
As of 2021, the college offers more than 30 majors, an evening program, a variety of graduate courses, and a doctoral program, and executive leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Lemoyne is a 160-acre campus.
I think I knew that somehow. I think somebody told me that recently. Huh.
With is mostly located in the suburban town of DeWitt, although a small portion of the campus is within the city of Syracuse. Mm-hmm. As of 2021, there are 35 buildings on campus.
Now, we didn't get to go to this one. Last spring break.
Where's Syracuse?
New York. It's a long way away. Like, last spring break, we got to see some games because it was like Maryland, Eastern Shore, Navy. Wasn't too far away from us. But yeah, there was no way we were making it to this one, unfortunately. Lemoyne College begins every academic year with two rituals. Number one, moving in weekend, when current students help to carry the boxes and suitcases of the new first-year students into the dormitories. That's really cool. I like that. And number two, the Mass of the Holy Spirit, which continues a tradition dating back to the first Jesuit school established in Messina, Sicily in 1548. Man, that's nearly a 500-year-old tradition right there. Another annual tradition at Lemoyne College is Dolphy Day, which originated in 1971. Dolphy Day is named for Eric Dolphy and has been said to have been inspired by the Frank Zappa song, the Eric Dolphy Memorial Barbecue. I have not heard that song. I need to listen to that song. And although Lemoyne's mascot is Dolphin, campus officials say there is no direct relation between the name of this event and the college icon. Because as soon as I saw that...
Dolphy Day.
Well, that's it. They're called the Dolphins. As soon as I saw Dolphy Day, I was like, obviously that's what it is. However, as early as the 2nd century, Christians associated the dolphin with love and tenderness. Lemoyne named its team the Dolphins to encourage students to look to the future, because the dolphin is a sign of comfort and union and fraternal charity. The dolphin is a constant reminder that Lemoyne is steeped in centuries-old tradition and philosophy. Huh. I wonder if people who follow the Miami Dolphins, there's more Christians than any other group. I don't know. I didn't know that a dolphin was a Christian symbol at all. I have never heard that before.
I didn't know either.
That was brand new to me either.
I think the Miami Dolphins, because they have dolphins in Miami.
That makes sense. Yeah, see, that makes sense, because it's Florida.
It's by the ocean.
That makes sense. Syracuse, I tend not to think of dolphins.
Yeah.
But that's not why they picked it, though. They picked it for a completely different reason. Now, I never know when I look at this what I'm going to find. There were some interesting alumni for this one. So, start us off then, JJ, with the first one. I think it's pronounced Jim DeShayas, I think.
All right. Jim DeShayas is a former professional baseball left-handed starting pitcher. He played for the Major League Baseball for 6 teams over the course of 12 big league seasons.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of long.
Yeah, that's a pretty good career.
DeShayas made his MLB debut with the New York Yankees on August 7th, 1984. He was the 1,000th person to play an official game for the Yankees.
That's kind of a cool number.
He was traded to the Houston Astros, and in his first full season in 1986, he posted 12 wins, an Astros rookie record, later broken by Roy Oswalt.
Perfect pronunciation. In 2001, and that's literally when I was just moving to the States, I actually have a few cards from Roy Oswalt. He was a really good pitcher at that time. In a September 23rd, 1986 game against the Los Angeles Dodgers, DeShayas set a major league record by striking out the first eight batters of the game. This feat was equaled by Jacob DeGrom. I'm not sure if you know who that person is.
Jacob DeGrom?
DeGrom, sorry. On September 14th.
I know who he is.
Yeah, 2014. And also, Germán Márquez on September 26th, 2018. I don't recognize that name. The record was later broken by Pablo Lopez and the Miami Marlins on July the 11th, 2021. Player for the Marlins. I'm assuming he broke it with nine. I didn't actually notice what it was. DeShayas was a mainstay on the Astros rotation from 1986 to 1991, pitching in 25 or more starts in each of those seasons. His best season was 1989 when he went 15-10 with a 2.91 ERA and 153 strikeouts. DeShayas holds the major league record for most at-bats without an extra base hit, with 373. And he eventually moved into the commentary field and is currently with the Cubs. Do you know what an extra base hit is then?
No.
So it means like a double, triple, home run. So he went 373 at-bats without giving up either a double or something. That's crazy. That's going to be several. I'm going to clap for that one as well. Like, if you went through all batters, like all 27, 373, that's like 13 games in a row without giving up. That's insane. But normally you don't pitch all nine innings either.
Yeah.
So that'd be when you talk about records that'd be tough to beat, that one would be crazily difficult to beat.
Yeah.
And if that wasn't good enough, we've got some more baseball players as well.
Tom Browning was an American left-handed pitcher. I just noticed something. They're both left-handed pitchers.
They are left-handed pitchers, yeah.
Who played from 1984 to 1995, spending almost his entire career with the Reds. In his rookie season in 85, Browning won 20 games and was runner-up for the National League Rookie of the Year award. He was the Reds' first 20-game winner in 15 years and equaled the most wins by Cincinnati left-hander since 1925.
I'm not even sure 1925. I'm not sure if Dixie Dean was a... not Dixie Dean. Dizzy Dean, sorry. Was a right-hander or not. Actually, I think he was the 30s, but yeah, that's a long way. Now, curiosity got me then. So if he won 20 games, which is pretty rare, and for a rookie to do that, that's amazing, who actually won the Rookie of the Year award? So it was Vince Coleman. In his Major League debut on April 18th, Coleman singled, walked, and stole the first two bases of his career. In 151 games, Coleman batted 267 and stole a rookie record 110 bases. That's an insane amount of bases. Yeah, exactly. He scored 107 runs, the most by a National League rookie since Richie Allen scored 125 in 1964. So, yeah, he had a ridiculous number of runs. He had a ridiculous number of stolen bases. So I was like, okay, fair enough. I can see why that guy won it. All right, tell us a little bit more.
He quickly became a mainstay in the team's pitching rotation, leading the National League in games started for the next 5 years. Browning pitched the 12th perfect game in Major League history on September 16th, 1988.
Mm-hmm. He's in the song that's... oh, gosh, now I've forgotten. Who's the Yankees pitcher who pitched in the World Series? Oh, my gosh. Don Larson.
Yeah.
He's in that song where they list all the pitchers. As soon as I heard Tom Browning, I was like, I didn't recognize that name. I knew he'd pitched the perfect game.
I didn't.
That's why I got you to read it, because I think both of you remember that.
Against the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Just the third perfect game by a left-hander. It was the highlight of the season in which he won 18-5, posting the league's second-highest winning percentage. He helped the Reds sweep in the 1990 World Series, winning Game 3 against the defending champion, Oakland A's.
Mm-hmm.
They're trash now. They may have been good then, but not now.
Uh-huh.
In 91, his last full season, Browning was named in a National League All-Star team.
Now, we normally, last season, we actually did how the Orioles doing, and I did how the Red Sox are doing. Red Sox are actually facing the A's right now. So, like, woohoo! That should
they're
be
definitely
some,
winning that.
Should be some wins right there. Now,
I
got a question for you. This is new for today. This is not in my notes, because this was literally new today. We're recording Thursday night, and I think my notes were completed on, like, Sunday. But I wanted to see a few more games in between first to see what would happen. What is the Oakland Athletics team going to be called in the 2025 season?
Isn't it going to be the Las Vegas?
It is Athletics? Not. They are not moving to Las Vegas. Ooh. Until 2028, apparently. It might be 2029, actually. I can't remember exactly. See, that was a good question. That's good that you knew that, though. Yeah, that's definitely... They were trying to get there, I think, this season or next season, but they can't get the stadium built quickly enough. All right, I think I'm going to have to help you then. They are going to be playing the next three seasons, actually, in Sacramento.
Sacramento Athletics?
Nope, that's not their name.
Oh.
They're just going to be called... The A's, that's it. They're not going to have a team name associated with them.
Everybody's
sitting, it's just going to be called,
they're
the
called
A's.
The Athletics, but they're not very athletic.
I don't know about that. They actually had a player who was, I think he said he was batting like over 400, or his on-base percentage was nearly 500. He got sent down to AAA. I can't remember what he did.
Why?
He broke a team rule, though. So that was, because everyone was like, why would you have such a good player and send him down? Like, you need a good player.
What'd he do?
I don't remember, and I didn't write it down. But I just, at the time, it wasn't relevant. I'd forgotten that he pitched in the World Series against the Oakland A's. So, pretty cool record from that person. Now, while I was looking through this, I saw the name Scott Cassidy, which is not going to mean much to you, but it did for me because I'd already researched it. Scott Cassidy is the coach of the LeMoyne team right now. So you're going to start by telling us a little about his career as a player. I'll talk to you a little bit about his career as a major leaguer, and then I think you're going to finish off with what he's been doing as a coach since. So go ahead, start us off.
LeMoyne head baseball coach Scott Cassidy, in 98,
I think, is the year he graduated. This is from LeMoyneDolphins.com news from October 31st, 2023. I did mean to say that at the start. It's just the name of their web. It's just their webpage.
Oh.
So if you're looking for news, that's where you go.
All right. Was inducted into the Greater Syracuse Sports Hall of Fame, the GSSHOF.
That's just the initials.
On Monday night during a dinner, and was in
an induction ceremony.
An induction ceremony held at the On Center.
Don't know where that is because I don't know Syracuse, but keep going.
As a student athlete, Cassidy registered 14 wins, 18 complete games, a 3.44 earned run average, and a 153 strikeouts. As a 3-year starter on the mound for the Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
As a senior, Cassidy was selected as the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference Player of the Year after going 7-5 with a 3.06 ERA and 83 strikeouts.
I don't know if you were impressed by that. 18 complete games. Nobody from the bullpen were needed.
Cool.
Even to get one complete game nowadays is rare, because they'll normally bring in like the setup people. I know this was late 90s, but even so, 18 complete games over 3 years is absolutely crazy. After graduating, and obviously people picked him up with those types of figures, Cassidy embarked on a 10-year professional career, first by signing with the Toronto Blue Jays as an amateur free agent. He made his major league debut against the Red Sox on April 1st, 2002, throwing 1 2/3 scoreless innings. Cassidy appeared in 58 games as a rookie for the Blue Jays, posting a 1-4 record with 48 strikeouts in 66 innings. Cassidy joined the Padres for their run to the 2005 West Division title, and in 10 appearances out of the bullpen, Cassidy compiled a record of 1-1 with 12 strikeouts over 12 1/3 innings. In 2006, Cassidy broke training camp with the Padres. He pitched in 42 games, going 6-4, with a 2.53 ERA and 49 strikeouts in 42 innings. Cassidy announced his retirement in 2008. So, yeah, he played in some pretty good teams, played some good innings, and managed, I would say, a very good ERA as well. All right, what about him as a head coach then?
Cassidy recently completed his 13th season as the head coach of the LeMoyne baseball program after leading the Dolphins to a 34-22 record in 2023. He sports a 323-252-2 record.
How do you get two draws? We talked about this before. I don't know how to get a draw in baseball. Exactly. But whatever. Anyway.
I know how to do it in soccer.
Oh, actually, we know for this one, actually. If a team has to leave because they've got to catch a plane or something, they'll agree at a certain point, game over. So that might actually be the reason. I think we talked about that in a previous one, actually.
Record in charge of his alma mater.
Alma mater. That's his original college he went to. That's what they say when it's the school that you went to yourself.
All right. He has guided the program to four NCAA championship berths, including each of the last two seasons.
Mm-hmm. He has seen two of his pitchers, Josiah Gray and Ryan Murphy, be drafted in the top five rounds of the MLB draft, with one, Josiah Gray, already reaching the major leagues as he in the rotation for the Washington Nationals. I was wondering if you were going to jump in there and go, I recognize that name.
Who?
Josiah Gray.
I think.
He played for the Nationals. All right, well, not surprisingly, then the next alma mater is, where is he? Josiah Gray.
Gray was drafted by the Reds in the second round.
Oh, hold on. I think we missed one here. This.
After not being heavily recruited out of New Rochelle High School, Gray accepted his only scholarship offered to play college baseball for the LeMoyne Dolphins near Syracuse, New York. He spent his first two seasons at LeMoyne, splitting time as a shortstop and a pitcher before transitioning to mound full-time.
I thought this was interesting. So we talked the other day about Pee Wee Reese, how he didn't like play really at all in high school until his senior year, and then didn't really play much then either. And then he kind of just played for fun, and then suddenly became a massive player. He had only one offer out of college, and he took that one offer. And now he's somebody that's playing for the Nationals. As a freshman, he had a batting average of just .265 and an earned run average of 8.31. After becoming the full-time closer as a sophomore, his ERA, 0.63. That's a bit of a decrease, 8.31 to 0.63. As a junior in 2018, he went 11-0 with a 1.25 ERA in 13 starts. So not surprisingly, as you were just about to tell us, drafted.
I think I have a Josiah Gray card.
Okay, that's very possible. All right, so you were about to tell us about him being drafted, so...
He was drafted by the Reds in the second round, 72nd overall of the 2018 MLB draft.
Mm-hmm.
On December 21st, 2018, the Reds traded Gray along with
Jeter Downs
and Homer Bailey to the Dodgers.
I'm not sure. Homer Bailey might be from this area. There was one of those types of pitchers who was from this area. Might not be. He might just be someone out of my fantasy team and I'm mixing him up. For Matt Kemp and Yasiel Puig. That might not be an easy one for you to know.
Yasiel Puig.
Yeah.
Alex Wood, Kyle Farmer, and Cash considerations.
That's a pretty big trade. There's a lot of people involved.
He made 25 starts in the minors with an 11-2 record and a 2.7 ERA with 147 strikeouts in 130 innings.
That's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. He was named as the Dodgers Minor League Pitcher of the Year.
No surprise. On July 30th, 2021, Gray was traded to the Nationals along with Kybert Ruiz, Donovan Casey, and Gerardo Carrillo in exchange for Matt Scherzer and Trey Turner. That's a couple of big names that the Dodgers got out of it.
Trey Turner.
Yep, and Matt Scherzer. In 2023, Gray went 8-13 but posted a career-best 3.91 ERA. He was named to the 2023 MLB All-Star Game as the Nationals' only representative representative. So the only person that went to the All-Star game for the Nationals, which is, I agree, at the All-Star game, Gray pitched the bottom of the third inning for the National League and allowed no runners on base. So it's pretty amazing how many people we've got who are connected to baseball who went to LeMoyne. Sometimes you don't get any at all. And we're not even finished, Jay. We got more.
Oh, my God.
Come on, next one, Rob Manfred.
Rob?
I don't know if you know who Rob Manfred is.
No.
All right, I guess you're going to find out.
He's an American lawyer and business executive who is serving as a 10th commissioner of MLB. In 87, Manfred began working with the Major League Baseball during collective bargaining.
Mm-hmm.
He joined the MLB on a full-time basis in 98, serving as executive vice president of economics and league affairs.
Correct. Manfred negotiated MLB's first drug testing agreement with Major League Baseball players in 2002 and represented MLB in negotiations with the MLBPA when forming new collective bargaining agreements in 2002, 2006, and 2011. And in 2013, Manfred led MLB's investigation of the Biogenesis scandal.
Oh, what's that?
I'm not sure exactly, but I'm assuming it's to do with the drugs again.
All right. In August 14th, 2014, MLB owners elected Manfred to succeed Bud Selig as the MLB commissioner.
Bud Selig used to be one of the owners, I think, of the Milwaukee Brewers. So I know if I-5's Tom's listening, he'd probably be able to tell us a lot more about Bud Selig. But yeah, he was a long-time MLB commissioner before Manfred.
He stated that his primary goals as commissioner were youth outreach, embracing technology, and quickening the pace of play.
So you got Rob Manfred to thank, because you actually got back into baseball because of the play ball thing that we went to at Coppin State just over 2 years ago. So that's part of his thing. Some of the rule changes and quickening the pace of play. 2015, he included batters must remain in the batter's box and the installation of time clocks to limit time spent around commercial breaks. For 2017, the no pitch intentional walks were improved in MLB for the first time. So I don't know if you ever saw that. What they used to do is the catcher used to stand out to the side miles away and they just throw four balls in the way, which was ridiculous,
and then somebody they hit a single
somebody has tried to do it before. If it's too slow, they'll get
it. I forgot, but he was a famous person. He hit it and then drove in a run and got a single.
So now you just say intentional walk and they just walk. So that was something to speed it up. Before the 2018 season, Manfred introduced more rule changes to affect the pace of play, including reducing the time in commercial breaks and limiting players' visits to the pitcher's mound. And you actually see that now as well, like how many times you're allowed to go out to the pitcher's mound.
Somebody, one of the catchers went out to the pitcher's mound to Max Scherzer, just to make him mad by posing an unfair fantasy football agreement, and he threw a few miles faster.
Oh, okay. On July 26, 2023, his contract was extended through the 2028 season, and in February 2024, Manfred said that he would step down when his contract expires in January 2029. Now, I would normally
that's the year the A's are going to...
Probably, yeah. Hey, he might have picked a good time to get out then, possibly. He doesn't have to deal with all that stuff. Now, normally I would stop at famous players, but there was a famous teacher who also was at LeMoyne as well. So you got to read this one, JJ. This would be cool.
Why
if you got to
do it, since you're the teacher?
I'm going to do some of it, and you're going to do the first part. You're going to tell us about Carmen Basilio.
Carmen Basilio was an American professional boxer who was a world champion in both what is a welterweight?
I don't know. If you're asking me how heavy it is, I don't know. I don't know
and
those numbers.
And middleweight divisions, beating Sugar Ray Robinson for the latter title, an iron chin pressure fighter.
Do you know what that means, if he had an iron chin?
When he got hit in the chin, it didn't bother him.
Yeah, it didn't. Yeah, he used to be able to take punches.
Basilio was a combination puncher who had great stamina and eventually wore many of his opponents down with vicious attacks of the head and body.
In 1957, the Ring Magazine, named Basilio Fighter of the Year, and he won the Hickok Belt, a trophy that was awarded to the top professional athlete of the year. The Boxing Writers Association of America named him Fighter of the Year.
In 55 and 57, Basilio also holds the distinction of being in the Ring Magazine's Fight of the Year in 5 consecutive years, 55-59,
mm-hmm.
a feat unmatched by any other boxer.
In 2002, he was voted by Ring Magazine as the 40th greatest fighter of the last 80 years, and he was inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame, I've been there, in the inaugural class of 1990. Wait, I would have to look back at my pictures.
A thing to see how hard your punch is?
I don't think so. I would have to look, but I bet if I took pictures, I'd probably have a picture of that. But I didn't know who he was at that time. Well, obviously, you weren't as excited by it as I was, but I thought that was pretty cool. I was like, man, that's really cool. I was like, you had a world championship boxer there as well, but... All right, you're obviously not quite as... You don't think it's quite as cool as...
Well.
All right.
I know Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali.
Well, I don't think Mike Tyson went to LeMoyne, though, so it was a little bit difficult. I had to pick things that were relevant for LeMoyne as we were doing this. So now, continuing on from the news, May 10th, 2023. The reason we didn't talk about LeMoyne last year, this is why we're doing all the stuff this year, because the move to Division I and the Northeast Conference is a this is a quote, is a milestone event for LeMoyne College, said President Lemura. Since the college's founding in 1946, athletics has been a vital component of our Jesuit ideal of cura personalis, care for the mind, body, and soul. By making this move, we are building on a strong foundation of excellence that has been a hallmark of our student athletes and our programs.
On behalf of the Northeast Conference Council of Presidents, we are thrilled to welcome LeMoyne College to the NEC family, said NEC Commissioner Noreen Morris. During our membership evaluation process, it became abundantly clear there was tremendous mission alignment between the NEC and LeMoyne from an academic, athletic, and community perspective.
Now, I could have just said they moved from Division 2 to Division 1, but you asked me before, like, how do you get to become a Division 1 school? And I was like, I have no idea. I literally have no idea. So that talks there a little bit about that process. So there's obviously certain things they have to look for, certain criteria have to be met, there's an evaluation process, and LeMoyne met this. So how did LeMoyne do in their last year as a Division 2 school then?
Following a slow start, the baseball team won 19 of the 24 games, en route to earning a berth in the NCAA championship super regionals for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
What's the...
I think that means when you get through the first round. So, you know, like the sweet, we have the 64 teams and you get to like the sweet 16. I think it's that. Or it might be, actually, perhaps it's the second round of the regionals. That might be what that is. All but they'd obviously won another match to get that far. So it wasn't just like their first game. The Dolphins finished?
The Dolphins finished 34-22 overall, won the...
I think it's the Northeast 10 Conference, but I'm not sure.
Northeast 10 Conference, Southwest Division regular season title, and earned the number 3 seed in the NCAA East Regional. LeMoyne captured the East 2 Regional Championship and advanced to the East Regional Finals for the first time since 2012.
LeMoyne finished 2 wins shy of making its first NCAA Division II College World Series appearance since 1981. The Dolphins closed the season ranked 23rd in the final National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association top 25 poll. So the Dolphins are pretty good. I don't know if you noticed the figures for a coach. He has a record way above 500 as well. So yeah, it's kind of interesting to see. Is there a big difference though between Division II and Division I as they're playing?
Division I's more famous.
It is, but that doesn't mean they're necessarily better. We'll have D1. To see. It is D1, but is it better to be a really good D2 school as opposed to a not-so-good Division 1 school? So anyway, we'll see how it plays out. So this one was, for some reason, a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. So game one is Thursday, JJ. So why don't you tell us how the Thursday
first
game went?
First inning, 4-0, LeMoyne. Third inning, 5-0, LeMoyne. Fourth inning, it was 6-0, LeMoyne. Sixth inning, it was...
There's a big number in there. He's struggling.
13-0 LeMoyne. Mm-hmm. In the seventh inning, it was 16-1 LeMoyne.
Mm-hmm.
In the eighth inning, it was 17-1 LeMoyne.
Yeah.
19 hits versus 5 hits. one error for both.
Yep, 235 attended, just under 3 hours. The starting pitcher for Lemoyne was Jay Goldman, who went 6 innings, gave up 4 hits, no earned runs, and 8 strikeouts.
Wait, isn't Syracuse like a famous college?
Yeah. Yeah, University of Syracuse,
that's the
definitely.
That's the reason why I know Syracuse.
And Nico Felber was a starting pitcher for Coppin. Takes his record to 1-3 with a loss. 4 innings, 9 hits, 5 earned runs with a couple of strikeouts. Now, I actually did watch this game. I told you the other week, I tried to watch and then couldn't watch. This one, I watched the start, and then we were doing something later. The big inning, really, it should be the one with 7 runs, but yeah. I don't want to do that one. I actually want to talk about the part that I saw at the start of the game. I don't have the first person who was batting for Coppin, but the last 2 outs in the top of the first were Gaither struck out swinging, and Holmes stole second, and then Sam Nieva struck out looking. There was 1 hit in the inning, no errors, and 1 person was left on base. And then this is when Lemoyne started to take over. Zay Brush grounded out, that's 1 out. A. Roden doubled to left center, Nevins flied out, so there's 2 outs, and there's only 1 person on, and it looked like at this time, I was like, all right, we're looking good here. Looks like we can get through the inning, and then unfortunately got away. Rias singled through the left side, run scored. Sullivan singled through the right side, somebody advanced. Foreno walked, and Sullivan advanced to second. Keniston doubled down the left field line, giving up 3 runs, so this is 4-1 now. Ball got hit by a pitch. Ball advanced to second on a passed ball, and then Wheelahan flied out to center field. So 4-0. So remember at the top of the first, it was 2 outs in a row, right? Struck out, yeah. Struck out. All right, the top of the second inning, Marte fouled out, Cologne struck out, and Moore struck out as well. So 4 out of the 5 batters in the first, second struck out. So yeah, after that point, Lemoyne kind of dragged the game away, and yeah, it quickly got away from Coppin, unfortunately.
Well, since they have good pitchers in the MLB, they probably have good pitchers now.
Yeah, could be. We'll have to see. Perhaps in a few years' time, that person that I just mentioned, we might actually recognize them. All right, what about game 2 then, Jackson, on the Friday?
4th inning. 1-0 Coppin.
Mm-hmm.
We like that.
All right.
5th inning, 6-1.
All right, and that's actually where I want you to stop. It actually says in your notes, stop after the 4th, because this was the big inning. So in the 5th inning, Coppin went down 1-2-3, and then Lemoyne came up. So Foreno got hit by a pitch, Keniston flied out, Patchett doubled to right center, Wheelahan singled to third base, Wheelahan stole second. Hold on. I thought he singled. And if he singled, I'm sorry. I was thinking singled to third base. I thought he was on third base. Okay. Brush singled to right field. Brush stole second. Roden walked. Nevin struck out swinging. They got 2 runs at this point. And then the killer in this inning was Reese Homan to right field. Grand slam. 4 RBIs. Roden scored. Brush scored. Wheelahan scored. And then Sullivan flied out to center field.
Why could there have been Coppin?
It was unfortunate. If it hadn't been for that, it could have easily been 2-1 going into the rest of the game. Anyway, what happened? Perhaps they came back. It was 6-1 when you left it. So what happened in the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th?
Right, 6th inning, 8-1, Lemoyne,
mm-hmm.
Nothing else. 11 hits to 3, 1 error for Lemoyne.
Yeah, only 3 hits. That's kind of tough. The starting pitcher, Crystal, went 7 innings, 1 hit, only gave up 1 run, only walked 1 person, and had 5 strikeouts. My question to you is, how is his winning record only 1-5? He was 0-5 going into this game. And those statistics are amazing. And when I looked, it said he'd given up 27 runs in 41 innings, which is not too bad. But only 16 of them were earned. So there were 16 earned runs and 11 unearned runs. So obviously his team was not helping him out very much, unfortunately. But he did have an ERA of 3.5. Before that, so hey, that's the way it goes sometimes. I didn't ask you on the first game if there was any significant Coppin figures. I'm gonna guess probably even less for this one because there was only 3 hits in total.
Right.
I'll let you look. Brush for Lemoyne had 4 hits, and Foreno and Patchett had 2 hits.
Brody, Sam, and Kai had 1 hit,
and that would be it.
Damon had 1 run,
yeah, yep, probably walked him again somewhere, right?
That Sam seems to had be. 1 RBI,
yeah. Yeah, but unfortunately not enough for this one. So, is Coppin going to get swept? What happened in the last game? And it says stop after the sixth inning, so that'll be it. Or actually after the fifth inning, I guess.
First inning, 3-1 Des Moines.
Mm-hmm.
Third inning, 4-1 Des Moines. Fourth inning, 5-1 Des Moines. Fifth inning, nothing.
All right, so it's 5-1 Des Moines going into this inning. So what happened in the big... Hold on. So I'm sorry, we can actually do the next inning, JJ. I'm sorry, I did do it at the right place. Go ahead, tell us what happened in the sixth.
11-1 Des Moines. Seventh inning, 11-3 Des Moines.
Uh-huh.
Eighth inning, 6-11
uh-huh.
Des Moines.
That's the final, I think, right?
10 hits to 6.
Yeah.
Popping the more hits.
Yeah.
Des Moines had one more error with 2.
Yeah, and Des Moines still took the win, yeah. You would think with 10 hits you'd get more than 6 runs, and you'd hope with only giving up 6 runs, you wouldn't 6 hits, you wouldn't give up 11 runs, but that's the way that it went. The beginning, I'm going to do 2, and I'm going to do them just for copping, okay?
All right.
So in the 7th inning, this is when they came back a bit, DiVittorio singled to center, Holm reached on a fielder's choice, Thompson come in to pitch hit, but struck out swinging, Watson homered to right field, 2 RBIs, Marte walked, and then Alonghi reached on a fielder's choice, but that meant that Marte was out, so that was the end of the inning. But they did manage to get 2 hits and 2 runs. And then in the top of the 8th, Cologne came in and pinch hit and walked. Black popped up to second base. Marciano ground out to second base. DiVittorio doubled down the left field line. Holm singled up the middle. Sensio became a pinch hit for Thompson, and he doubled down the right field line, and then Watson ground out. So 3 runs, 3 hits. But yeah, within those couple of innings, Coppin managed to put 5 runs together, so I did want to talk about that. I think if you look on the stats for this one, you will see a standout performance for Coppin, if I remember correctly.
Alright. Anthony had 4 hits, 2 RBIs.
Uh-huh. And 4 at-bats. So he went 4-for-4.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Kai had 1 hit, 1 RBI.
Mm-hmm.
Damon had 1 hit.
Mm-hmm.
Jaden had 1 hit, 1 RBI.
Mm-hmm.
Braylon had 1 hit, 2 RBIs.
Yep.
Daniel Moore had 1 hit.
And the main person from Des Moines was Foligno, the DH. He had 4 at-bats, 2 hits, and he got 3 RBIs. So he was the person who was getting them. Starting pitcher for Coppin was Caden Straley. 5 innings, 5 earned runs, 6 walks, and no strikeouts. You would hope for it to be the other way around. So they didn't get as many hits, Jay, but that's why they got so many runs. They were given some free passes along the way. Clay Thompson came in for 0.2 innings, unfortunately gave up 5 runs. And then John Neal closed out of the game, 2.1 innings, and just 1 earned run. With a couple of strikeouts in there. Winning pitcher for Des Moines was Parker, who goes 2-0 on the season. 6.2 innings, 7 hits, and 3 earned runs. Now, normally we'll also talk other college baseball as well. Now we got we're getting there. We're getting there. We only really got one to talk about. Duke lost, so you don't. I told you NC State were good. You can't win the bracket now. I already have more points than you. You don't have any teams left. So you're done, unfortunately, with that. So I wasn't realizing. I said, hey, we're leaving this on a cliffhanger. Forgetting by the time the episode had dropped, everyone would already know what that result was anyway, so they would have known you were done. So Jackson Holliday did not make it to the Orioles starting lineup, unfortunately. They sent him down to AAA. So I thought what might be interesting for you to do, JJ, is tell us about what happened in the Norfolk game last night. So here you go. Here's the scorecard for you. You like that scorecard? This is a baseball game, not a football game, in case you were wondering. So if you want to talk us through it, there's a lot to talk about in this game.
All right. First inning.
The Knights are from Charlotte, in case you don't know.
Oh yeah, I remember.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you could remember.
Because you went to one of the games.
I did, yeah, when I had my conference. Yeah.
First inning, 3-2 the tie. Uh-huh.
You said you had some trouble adding on the last one. You might have even more fun on this one.
4-7.
Yep.
Knights.
Yep.
Fourth inning, it is 6-7.
Good.
Knights.
Uh-huh.
Fifth inning, it is 8-8.
Correct.
Sixth inning, it is 15-8
uh-huh.
Tides.
Seventh inning, it is 21-8.
20.
Tied. 20-8.
Uh-huh.
Tied. And then it is 25-11.
Uh-huh.
Tied. And then in the ninth, 26-11. Tied.
How many hits in the game?
29 hits for Tides, 12 for the Knights. Two errors by the Knights,
uh-huh,
and one by the Tides.
The winning pitcher was Davidson, who's 1-0 on the season, with a 9.82 ERA. And
the
losing
one.
Pitcher is Horn with a 20.25 ERA.
That's not good.
So I already did the pitchers, so anyone in the lineup who takes your fancy there?
Ooh.
Perhaps tell us about how Jackson Holliday did. That would be the one we want to know, right?
It's who I saw first.
Yeah, well, he's playing leadoff.
Four hits,
yep.
Five runs, two RBIs, two walks,
uh-huh.
Average 400,
uh-huh.
OPS 1.24.
You know if the OPS is over one, then they're really good, right?
Yeah.
Okay, there's a few others on here. Stowers, I think, made it up to Orioles last year.
Look,
they obviously got sent down. He was DH. Hold on.
Stowers
went, he went 4-7 with 7 RBIs. He's also batting 400, and he has an OPS of 1.503. But I left the main one for you to spot, so I think you spotted it now. Okay, go ahead. You tell us about Castillo then, and then I'll steal the one who's batting third instead from you.
I already noticed his OPS.
Okay, well, do you want to tell us how he did on that game?
7 at bats, 4 runs, 5 hits, 10 RBI. 1K.
For one player to get 10 RBIs, for one player to get 7 RBIs and him not even be the top player is absolutely ridiculous. Now, having said how good some of those OPSs were, I would like you to look at the Knights and look at their right fielder then as well.
Well, let me read his OPS.
1.785. Mm-hmm.
Dang. 1.985.
Now, it is early in the season, but that's absolutely ridiculous.
Has a 0.77.
Well, if you look, he had 5 at bats and he didn't have any hits. So he's
zero.
Obviously,
his average is 0.
It was, yes, he hasn't. So he's been on base, but obviously at some point. Strikeout.
Okay.
So in that game, the DH went 0-5 with 5 strikeouts. Yikes. Okay, that's not such a good
one. I didn't know he was the DH.
That's what it says. Somebody mentioned how good Jackson Holliday was in that game, and they mentioned the other people, and they were like, I think this might be the best AAA team in history. I was like,
it is.
Could be.
26-11.
It does say that they're 4-1 right now.
I kind of want to watch them.
And that would be an interesting one. Perhaps those last innings, if we could watch the 6th, 7th and 8th inning, there's 17 runs to be watched. So that was why I picked that one out. I thought you would like to do that. Now,
yes.
As there's not much to talk about for the basketball right now, it is going to be Final Four weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You did ask me some questions about, like, which is the biggest baseball team, biggest basketball teams. So I did pull some up for you. I got some. We got some stats for you, so you can find out who some of those teams were. So first of all, most Elite Eight appearances. So what I generally did was put the top 5 in, and if the 6th one was much lower, I put the 6th one in, just so you could see how good the top 5 were. So do you want to tell us how the teams were doing?
Kentucky, 2019.
That was their last appearance in the Elite Eight. That's what the number shows you.
38.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
North Carolina.
Woohoo.
Wait, what if that's NC State?
It would say NC State if it was NC State. UNC is North Carolina.
All right, fine. 29.
So they're quite a few behind, but they're still second.
Kansas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kansas
24?
Is a good team.
Duke?
Boo.
Duke 2024?
But you notice it does say, it says 2024, because they obviously did make the Elite Eight, because that was one of your picks that you picked. You picked them to
24.
Beat Houston. Yep.
Oh, they did it in 24,
yeah.
And they have 24.
That's right. And you did say UCLA was a big team.
Yeah.
And you were right.
2021 with 22.
Uh-huh.
And then Villanova with 14.
So I picked that one as the 6th one just to show you. That's a big drop-off, though, right? From the top 5 to the 6th one. So imagine kind of after that one. After that, we got Final Fours.
All right. North Carolina, 21.
Go Heels! Woo!
UCLA with 19. Kentucky with 17. Duke with 17.
Ooh.
Kansas with 15. Michigan State with 10.
So there's a big drop-off.
There are
off
football
again.
Team.
They can play basketball as well. You can do no, more than can't. One sport. All right, what about finals then? How many teams have made the last two teams?
I'm not reading the first one.
First one, UNC. Let's go Heels. Although it is a tie. It's a three-way tie, so... But they were... Actually, the other 12. Team... Yeah, they made the most recent final in 2020.
UCLA with 12. Mm-hmm. And Kentucky with 12.
Yep.
Duke has 11.
Boo.
Kansas has 10. Indiana.
Yeah.
They have 6.
Absolutely.
The Pacers.
Absolutely. And then...
UCLA...
Who has the most championships, though?
UCLA with 11.
Yep.
Kentucky with 8.
Mm-hmm.
NC State with 6.
Doesn't say NC. That's UNC.
Oh, yeah.
It says North Carolina.
Ah.
They're third most all time, and you're going to laugh
Duke
at that? Okay.
With 5.
Yep. Indiana has 5,
Indiana
and UConn has 5 as well. So UConn obviously could jump up that list, because they are in the last 4. So if the UConn
so
won this year,
6?
They would be on 6 as well with North Carolina. So
I hope Duke wins next year,
now,
and then the year after.
You're obviously so very impressed that UCLA have won 11 championships. But if you go back to that first stat, how many times have they made the Final Four?
22.
They didn't even appear in 19. I don't know. It's
wait, that's a lot.
They had a very good run in I think it was the 60s, I want to say.
So in the
70s, 90s, perhaps?
In the 90s? Wait, no.
They're not so good.
Wait,
then.
No. They had 50s. They had they have 500% on the
500%
out of 1,000. Yeah.
So you mean a half?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. On all their on the champions in the Elite Eight.
Okay, but now at least you know who are the big teams in college basketball.
I don't even know how Kentucky has 38.
Kentucky tends to get players that only stay for 1 year and then they go to the NBA. And often they're very good players, but they don't always gel as a team particularly. Name game time. Time to end the answer. I did read it wrong last week. I did say that it was G. Paolo D. M, sorry, and it was supposed to be G. Paolo D. I did put it in the episode notes, and that person was Giuseppe Paolo DiMaggio. Obviously,
he's
now more commonly known as Joseph Paul DiMaggio. Best known for setting the record for the longest hitting streak in baseball, 56 games, which still stands today. No, that's something completely different. DiMaggio was a 3-time American League MVP, an all-star. The Iron Horse was Lou Gehrig, and an all-star in each of his 13 seasons. During the tenure with the Yankees, the club won 10 American League pennants and 9 World Championships. So, Yogi Berra has 10.
Yeah.
Joe had 9, so he was the second to him. At the time of his retirement, he ranked 5th in home runs with 361 and 6th in career slugging with 579, and that was the stat that we gave. That was one of the clues. He was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1955 and was voted the sport's greatest living player in a poll in 1969. His brothers Vince and Dom were also Major League center fielders, and that was one of the clues last week as well. His brother asked him to play shortstop. That was a little misleading. The team on the West Coast was the San Francisco Seals. He actually had a longer hitting streak for the Seals than he did for the Yankees. It was a 62-game hitting streak or something like that. DiMaggio is also widely known for his marriage and lifelong devotion to Marilyn Monroe. So that was the answer to last episode's question. Jay, this is our third episode in about 8 days, so I did not create a new one this time. I did hear from High Five Tom today, though. He is struggling on our one that you gave from him from Brooklyn. So nice job. You said that would be a tricky one for him. He's struggling. He has a name, but he knows it doesn't match the clue. So
take that.
We'll leave it at that. And next time we do an episode, we will record.
I want to name it.
Not today. We don't have one. I think today's episode was kind of long because I knew you wanted to talk basketball. I knew I wanted to talk about the Tides game, and I knew that there was a lot of cool people from LeMoyne. So
you know
that should be about
head.
It. No.
Oh.